You're listening to Innovating Infrastructure, where we showcase new and emerging technology-based solutions to the world's infrastructure challenges. I'm Monica Bennett, and I'll be your host for this 10-part series, which is presented to you by the Global Infrastructure Hub. Each podcast episode will be a 25-minute interview with emerging entrepreneurs from the top 10 finalists of our InfraChallenge Innovation Competition. InfraChallenge gives startups and innovators the opportunity to present their technology-based solutions to the world. This year, it's being supported by the Italian G20 presidency, and the competition is focused on solutions for better and more resilient infrastructure. Don't miss our virtual InfraChallenge final event on Thursday, the 16th of September. You can find out more and register on our website at gihub.org. Join me for innovating infrastructure and discover technology solutions that are transforming infrastructure for the better. Today, to talk about an emerging solution in water and sanitation, I have with me Bara Wabe, the co-founder of Akyas, or Jordanian startup and one of the top 10 finalists of InfraChallenge 2021. Access to water and sanitation infrastructure is key to ensuring people's health and well-being. It also offers significant socioeconomic benefits through improved livelihood, productivity, and safety, particularly for women and girls. And yet, the United Nations estimates that 1 in 4 people around the world lack safe drinking water, and nearly half the global population lack access to safe sanitation. While there are compelling benefits from an economic and social perspective to investing in water and sanitation infrastructure, the upfront cost of these systems can often be a barrier to uptake. Bara from Akyas has developed a low-cost, low-maintenance, non-sewered sanitation system for underserved and remote communities. For all resources mentioned in this episode, visit the show notes at infrachallenge.gihub.org. Now, let's get into the interview. Enjoy! Today, I have the pleasure to speak with Bara Wabe from a company called Akyas. So welcome, Bara, to our podcast.
Hey, welcome.
So we'll start with quite a fun fact that I found on your LinkedIn profile. So your profile says that you're the toilet guy and that you're a self-taught sanitation practitioner. What inspired you to take this on?
Maybe to start with self-taught, because we don't teach sanitation in our education. I come from a humanitarian background. And while working on the field and working with the doctors and public health officers, I have gained a lot of knowledge. So the inspiration started seeing the impact of sanitation. We used to go to informal agricultural sectors, settlements, to provide medical support to people. And over there, every time we give people the same medicine and same treatment, and they keep getting sick. And after time, we realized they're getting sick because of the bad toilet they have. They had just like simple pit latrine that either overflow in winter and contaminate their kitchen and tent, or during summer, it becomes so hot and a hub for vector attraction and you just keep getting sick. And I think in 2015 or 2014, we made an upgrade for one of these informal agriculture settlements. We did an upgrade of the toilet and we saw a huge dramatic decrease in the infection rate between them. They just get like better. I think everything started at that point to see the value in good sanitation system. And from there on, we started to think outside the box and developing new sanitation products and services.
Yeah, it's a hugely impactful area. And sanitation, it's currently a big problem globally, but it has historically been a problem for as long as human beings have had settlements, I suppose. I mean, sanitation can cause so many health and social problems, you know, especially when you're talking about transmissible diseases, about safety of women and children trying to access latrine toilets, and especially in low to middle income countries as well. So can you give us some background on the magnitude of this problem that you're trying to tackle?
Well, today it's 2021, and surprisingly, 4.6 billion people, their waste are not safely managed and treated. In fact, most of the world's sewage just goes to seas and ocean and ponds. Today, 2.1 billion people don't have access to what's called a flush toilet. And around 800 million people are practicing open defecation. So it's a huge problem that most of us don't see or acknowledge because we take toilet as granted. We really never think about the size of the problem. And need of the infrastructure to handle this waste is just there, you know, like you're born, you're in house, and you have this toilet room, and that's it.
And so tell us a little bit about the solution that you have in terms of addressing this problem of sanitation, about the impact that your technology has on the affordability of sanitation solutions. So affordability is obviously a big barrier to a lot of remote and rural communities in terms of access to wastewater systems and services. So how does your solution address this particular issue?
So let's start thinking from how the current system really works. Then we can reverse engineer and say how we're going to solve the problem. The average adult produces around 1.5 liters of urine and 400 grams of feces a day. And we use around at least 15 liters of water to flush this waste from our toilet to the sewer network. So instead of really handling 2 kg of human waste, we are diluting it with another 15 liters. So in total, you're going to handle 17 liters of fecal waste per day per person. In other words, if you want to scale it up, every person a year produces around 500 kg of urine and fecal waste. Instead of handling 500 liters, we are ending up of handling around 5,500 liters of waste. And our current wastewater treatment plant works on the concept of oxidation. So we need to pump a lot of big amount of oxygen into the system to oxidize all the waste. And it's just insane because compressed air and oxygen is just expensive. Not to mention that you need to build this whole infrastructure to handle this waste. And that makes sense in a way, you know, when you think on the big picture. The world population in 1800 was around 1 billion. In the last 200 years, we multiplied to 7.5 billion. The growth rate of the current infrastructure does not match the population growth. And that explains why a big part of the population don't have access to safe treatment plant, wastewater treatment plant. So I think there should be a radical change in the way we treat waste. Why to build a centralized sewer network, right? One. And why to have a centralized wastewater treatment plant? And why to use water to start with just to convey our waste to these wastewater treatment plants? Already today, we are facing water scarcity all over the world. And when you think about it, flushing 15 liters of water from our home just to take the waste outside is just insane. So our system really starts tackling the problem by removing the water as medium or mediator to remove the waste. And we start like processing things with as water flushless toilet. Our whole approach, honestly, is based on using waterless toilet. And the way we do it is by separating fecal waste from liquids. And when we say liquid, we refer both to urine and cleansing water. And we do that through a special pan we have designed. And we call it our front-end system. Our front-end system connects to a bag, which simply collect and store the fecal waste. And within this bag, we have a powder mix that neutralizes all gram-negative bacteria, or what's known as pathogen. Now, the bag itself has unique technology, which is it acts as a membrane sheet. It allows only water vapor to pass. So when you think about the problem, poop is mainly water, 80% water. So through our bag, we can transform 10 kg of poop into 2 kg. And this will have a huge impact on the sanitation value chain. So instead of building a whole sewer network and infrastructure to dispose waste, we just like handle things on site and we design a system that is user-centric.
So you're able to tackle the affordability issue by obviously not needing the sewerage network. So that's obviously financially viable when you have a city of about 5 million people. But when you have a remote community that is very far detached from a lot of other services, then obviously building a sewer network over to that particular community becomes prohibitively expensive. But then if you don't have a sewer, what do you then do with the waste? But you're basically saying that you're providing an inexpensive and affordable solution to have this kind of on-site treatment of wastewater. You also mentioned that you are saving in terms of water consumption. So your toilets are water-free. How much water savings can you create through the use of your toilet?
So the average adult flushes a year around at least 5,000 liters of clean water. So only by going to waterless toilet, you're saving this amount of water, 5,000 liters.
Okay. And in line with the theme of our infra challenge, which is all about resilient infrastructure, how does this all relate to contributing to resilient outcomes?
I think, first of all, we have to zoom out and look to the big picture. By 2050, 70% of the world population will be located or living in urban centers, mostly in Asia and Africa, where today already most of these parts of the world are facing water scarcity. Not to mention, with the global warming and water scarcity, 2050 will be more harsh than today. Designing our future city to be more resilient means we need to design our city to consume less water and to be more focused on circular economy. So to be able to extract nutrients and other items from the waste and more in localized way approach. So I think where we're heading is designing the treatment center maybe in the future per building instead of investing in huge infrastructure zone. I think this could be the approach. So what we really envision in the future, let's say you have a building of 20 or 30 floors, we will use no water in disposing our waste from our toilet. And all of the waste is collected and it will be treated and transformed into an added value product that can be used also locally. For example, the human fecal waste can be transformed to a soil conditioner. If you want to tackle it from this approach, producing 1 ton of synthetic fertilizer produces 1.1 ton of carbon dioxide emission. Imagine that, not to mention, of course, the logistic cost of it. Transportation emits a lot of carbon dioxide. So imagine if we can produce our soil fertilizer on site, you immediately like make a huge contribution. By the way, like today, 3% of greenhouse gas emissions come from pet latrine. Also, 3% of greenhouse gas emission, I think, come from fertilizer industry. So we are addressing in one go 6% of the greenhouse gas emission. This is the way. Not to mention all the associated costs that comes along. Pumping water is a very energy intense process. For example, in Jordan, 10% of the energy consumed annually goes to water pumping station. And what we do with this water, we pump it back to the sewer network. So it adds up.
I think the circular economy aspect of your technology is really important. In fact, it's one of the key topics that we're looking at as well under the theme of resilience more broadly across the hub. How would one apply the bag with the waste in it as a fertilizer? And is that one of the applications that you tested through the three pilots that you had mentioned in your InfoChallenge presentation?
Today, we have built our pilot in Zaatari camp. It's a Zaatari refugee camp in northeast Jordan. And we built a couple of sanitation facilities under Oxfam umbrella. And we are partnering with the FAO, Food Agricultural Organization, to validate the impact of our treated fecal waste. Now, to start with, in many countries, the economical use of a treated human waste is not allowed by laws and regulation. So even though we end up with a high-end soil amendment product, we can sell it in the market. So what we're doing right now, of course, this is in the case of Jordan, but in many other countries, you can use the treated human waste in many economical activities. So you can transform it into biocharcoal or soil amendment, or there's a potential to convert it into an insulation material, by the way, and construction block. But what we are doing right now is we are using the byproduct we are producing to fight desertification. So we are working on a hyper-arid zone, and most of the sand we have over there like lack bio-organic matter. When you pour water to the soil, the water just goes fast because there is nothing that captures it. So by adding our byproduct and mixing it with the sand, we are increasing the water retention time, not to mention that we're increasing the organic matter content. With the support of FAO, we are planning to conduct a small study on the impact of using the byproduct we're producing on fighting desertification in Jordan. This is the best what we can do right now.
Yeah, fantastic. And how long has your business been in operation? What do you feel are some of the biggest challenges that you're facing at the moment?
I think let's start with the challenges. The biggest challenge is taboo. I work in a Muslim country. And per se, no one likes to talk about urine or feces. Like, no one wants to acknowledge that. So this is the first thing you face, not only with end users, also with ministries and INGOs. Because this is something no one talks about, honestly. And when you come and you say, I have a new product or a new method, no one is happy about it. No one is up to take the risk. Second, when you go to people and say, it's a flushless toilet, already no one is happy about it. The problem starts from here. In fact, we had to upgrade our system. This is a funny story. So we designed our toilet and we opened our sanitation facility And what we noticed in the first month, that people would go outside to the water source, fill a bucket, and go to the toilet and throw a bucket inside. Because this is their behavior. Even though we put like signs that it's waterless and don't use any water for flush, even if they read it, it doesn't mean they process it. So that was one of the things that we have to upgrade our design to handle. So there's a lot of things that required behavior change that we were not ready for. Not to mention that we have bias when it comes to toilet that we are not aware of. So this is really the main challenge. So when we talk about individual, imagine how you, when you talk with INGO and ministries. For the second part of the question, we started working on this business in 2017, and we registered a company in 2018. We started like developing the technology in 2018. It took us around 3 years to come up with a good working system.
That's an interesting story about the use of your water-free toilets. How did you go about implementing some of those behavior change initiatives?
First of all, I don't believe in behavior change. To change the way people act towards something is really exhausting, and we don't have the expertise. What we need to do is we need to design our product to overcome these hurdles. So we just upgraded our design. We built our sanitation facility during the COVID time. So in the camp, there is a very strong policy not to have public meetings. So we couldn't build a lot of community engagement event with the people because of the COVID context. However, we managed to talk with people multiple times in smaller circle. And end of the day, we ended up upgrading our design, honestly.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a very customer-centric approach to a solution. That sounds great. So, Bara, what is your market strategy at the moment, and where do you see yourself developing into in the future?
So, right now, we're developing product for the bottom of the pyramid population. As mentioned earlier, there is a lack of enough number of toilets for people in the world. So, right now, we're developing like really simple toilet that can be built anytime, anywhere, regardless of the infrastructure. So, this is where we're starting. And we're really focusing in the humanitarian sector because there is a big lack of sanitation products and services. But our future, we want to be the company who redefines sanitation. We want to introduce an automated toilet that fit our future buildings and apartments. This is our vision. Honestly, this is what we want to be our legacy. The people who introduced like an automated toilet, flushless toilet for our cities, future cities.
We need lots more companies with your vision, I think, Bara.
Yeah, it's a big market. And unfortunately, like the phones or smartphone were introduced to our market like 30 years ago. And you can see the big change in the technology in 30 years' time. But toilet did not change a lot in the last 3,000 years. We need to focus on this.
So what do you hope to achieve through the Infra Challenge? What attracted you to the innovation competition in the first place?
We realized earlier that people don't buy toilet, right? I think right now we can call ourselves like toilet innovators. But me personally, I never bought a toilet for my home, for my family, for anything. And that made us realize earlier that this business is going to be like business to business or business to organization or business to country government. So the ideas start there. And when we saw the competition, we felt it's a great opportunity to reach out to decision makers. Because if you're going to radicalize the way we build our toilet, it should be coming from top to down, not bottom to up. So we had this idea in mind.
What's been your experience of the Infra Challenge thus far?
First of all, we were very lucky to have Rindusa as our mentor. She was very direct with us and asked the right question that we never really asked ourselves. Like, to start with, we are not really a business-centered people. And having Rindusa on board, she asked the question we never dare to ask ourselves. This is one. The real value come with the infrastructure challenge was the seminars and the webinars that was held. It was our first time to talk with people from utility and infrastructure background industry. It's not like any people, like these are the people like consultation company and people with the 20 plus years in the infrastructure work, and they understand the cost of infrastructure. Like when you say you want to build a sewer network for 1 kilometer, the cost of it is more than $200,000, right? And this is something like a CapEx. You're not even like tackling the OpEx part of it, the operational cost of it. So when you talk with these people, basically they are potentially our client in the future. Like what we need is to reach out to the right people. And what you need only, honestly, is one client. In the utility industry or infrastructure industry, if you manage to get one client, he will do all the marketing for you. So it really changed all of our approach and marketing strategy.
That's great. Well, I'm glad that you were able to get that kind of experience from InfoChallenge. That's the intention of the innovation competition, to give you that kind of exposure. So thank you so much, Bara, for spending some time with us today. We wish you all the best with the InfoChallenge Top 10 Finals, and we look forward to speaking again soon.
Much appreciated. Yeah, looking forward.
Find out more about this technology and other top 10 finalists of InfoChallenge 2021 at infochallenge.gihub.org. Also, don't miss the virtual InfoChallenge final event on Thursday, the 16th of September. Join us and watch the top 10 make their final pitch to become the InfoChallenge 2021 winner. Register to attend at gihub.org. Thanks for joining me today. I'm Monica Bennett from the Global Infrastructure Hub, and you've been listening to Innovating Infrastructure.